We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
On August 11th, 2020, the Big Ten, led by its new commissioner, Kevin Warren, released a statement that shook the college football world. The Big Ten was canceling its fall football schedule due to the ongoing pandemic.
I think right now, like a lot of college football fans, just kind of devastated by the news that it's a reality now. Well, there won't be any college football as far as the Big Ten, and it sounds like eventually the Pac-12 for now.
The Pac-12 did follow suit, while the other major conferences remained in a holding pattern. With so many unknowns about the virus and more cases by the day, the entire season was hanging on by a thread.
It's incumbent on the Big Ten to share this medical information with the population at large, not just in sports.
And then, just 5 weeks later, the Big Ten changed its mind.
Great news for college football, great news for college game day, great news for everybody. You know, all we're waiting for now is the Pac-12 to make the same decision, and then we can get the whole band back together again. This is great.
The season was saved, at least some version of it. How exactly does a season get canceled and uncanceled within the span of a few short weeks? From the Solid Verbal, this is a special production. So, now what? My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. I'm joined, as always, by Dan Rubenstein. Dan, let's start here. Do you remember where you were March the 11th, 2020?
Yes. March 11th, I was in Brooklyn and not knowing what the hell was happening in the world. And I think it was my brother's birthday, too. So that's great.
Crazy day, right? That was the day the world sort of stood still. Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson, both test positive for COVID. That was kind of like the first straw in this weird world. We had an NBA game that was halted right before tip-off. There was a jam-packed arena. Remember, they booed upon hearing the announcement. And then shortly thereafter, at 9:46 Eastern time, the NBA just flat-out suspended its season until further notice.
I remember this. Yep.
I remember vividly Mark Cuban came out with a quote shortly thereafter saying, look, this is much bigger than just the NBA. I don't know if I'm going to send my kids to school tomorrow. Is it that big? Just a crazy state of affairs, to say the least. We're not going to get into the full history of the coronavirus here.
No.
But we are going to talk about college football. After that night in March, you and I at that point, we were doing streams like nearly every day on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just having conversations, maybe like bringing something silly and light to the world in the afternoons.
At some points doing trivia, right? Because that was
correct,
a thing that we did. But also trying to make heads or tails of what exactly was going on with this virus, with this pandemic. What was it going to mean for college football? We sort of knew it was going to be the tip of the spear. And I remember at one point we said there's like a 0% chance that this doesn't affect the college football season. We just didn't know what was going to happen next. We knew somewhere down the line we'd have to deal with that as a college football podcast, but we just didn't know where it was all headed. I feel like at some point in there, before we got to July, you flat out moved from Brooklyn to California, yeah. Right?
Yeah, we did pick up for at least an extended period of time, moved to California, eventually ending up in the Chicago suburbs. But I just remember, right, we were streaming and I was in the closet of like my bedroom in Brooklyn. And then all of a sudden we were doing streams and I was doing it from one of my brother's childhood bedrooms. And we were quarantining in another house when we flew to Chicago. And I was using a bunch of pillows to do broadcast quiet affairs. I don't know. It was a wild time. And all the while, by the way, just to bring it back to college football, you have each outspoken coach, positively or negatively, weighing in with no big college football governing body. It's just a bunch of coaches weighing in on what they think will happen months down the line.
And despite the fact that we had crazy uncertainty the deeper we got into the summer and near mutiny in some cases, it didn't always start that way.
You probably got to go back to most of the spring and early summer where everyone was saying that everyone was in sync. These commissioners were all talking to each other, athletic directors, like they were having all these daily calls. And what changed was, I believe it was July 9th, if I'm remembering the date correctly, when the Big Ten decided to go conference only schedule.
So that's Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, of the Big Ten Network, of SiriusXM. She's right. It didn't start out in a state of pure chaos. We just didn't know where things were headed. But once we got to that July 9th date, that is when things eventually started to change.
To be clear, Nicole is one of a handful of people who on the conference level was well-sourced with regard to the thinking of the higher ups at various conferences, within various conferences. So yeah, everybody was trying to wait as long as possible. But then July means in a normal year, what does it mean? It means preview magazines are coming out. It means video games are coming out. It means there are conference media days where coaches are giving press conferences in advance of fall camp. So July in earnest is when momentum before the season really gets going.
That's when the Big Ten certainly went out on its own. And you saw that the Pac-12 made a decision very soon after to also go conference only. So then those two leagues started to move a little bit more in lockstep than everybody else. And so that was the backdrop headed towards that first week in August where everyone had said, this is like our hard deadline. We need to make our decisions about if we're just going to delay the start of the season and if we're not going to do it at all. And I think that's really where, you know, the mess escalated.
So here's what happened.
Yes.
On July the 9th, the Big Ten comes out and announces it's going to play a conference only slate. The Pac-12 followed suit a day later with the same announcement. The interesting tidbit here is that, at least from the standpoint of the other major conferences, Dan, it seemed to come out of left field. And this image, I think, that we had been fed for the first couple months of uncertainty, starting in March, that everyone was talking, that they were in lockstep, it started to take on a little bit of a different landscape. This was, in earnest, the beginning of the mass confusion that we saw throughout the course of the summer. Collectively, what it meant, and we didn't know it at the time, was a showdown was coming in early August. And that's when conferences had decided that they needed to make a decision on whether or not to play. We'll talk about that timeline a little bit later and what drove that. But the story that really emerged here in talking with Nicole and others, Kevin Warren, the brand new commissioner of the Big Ten, he was not able to circle the wagons like his predecessor, Jim Delaney, and get everyone on the same page, both privately and publicly. That's what ultimately led to this state of mass confusion, Dan.
The fact is you have commissioners across the board that are either brand new, relatively new, not super well regarded within their own conference. And there were rumblings about, okay, this conference is going to follow this conference and this conference is paying attention to this element of everything. So everybody essentially is on a different page as for how to react and how to plan for a possible season.
because you have a brand new commissioner facing a scenario that no college commissioners had faced in 100 years, plus the decision to go out on your own in July and try to lead on something without being aligned with all the other commissioners, and then not having your ducks in a row, not having everyone on board, not even explaining everything correctly. So all of that was happening in early August. And then, you know, the next 5 weeks of anger, uproar, lawsuit from the Nebraska players, eventually getting back to the point of, okay, actually we can restart and we can restart in the fall.
I talked to our friend David Jones. Dan, you remember David?
Of course.
Longtime friend of the podcast, sports columnist from PennLive.com. I asked him, did you know what was going on? What was happening in this moment in time? He was a little bit more direct.
Oh, no. No one knew what the hell was going on. But look at it this way. I mean, the coaches didn't know what Kevin Warren was going to do. Did they? Was there any evidence that they did?
There was no evidence, Dan, for those of you playing along
no.
at home.
No, they were all in the dark.
The Big Ten decided on August the 11th that it was going to pull the plug on its fall season. Again, the Pac-12 followed suit shortly thereafter. At the time, I remember it felt inevitable that the whole house of cards is going to come down. And I remember we would read speculation from guys like Dennis Dodd, other national college football reporters, that this was the thing that was going to happen, that it was assumed at some point, August 11th, maybe shortly thereafter, that it wasn't just going to be the Big Ten and it wasn't just going to be the Pac-12, that it was going to be all of them. If that had happened, maybe we're talking about a spring season now as we record this. Maybe we're not talking about any 2020 or 2021 season at all.
Yeah, I mean, optics obviously played a huge element in all of this because nobody wanted to be seen as being careless or reckless or not caring about their students or coaches or staff members or student populace on campus. So everybody's weighing what they want to do, which is play football and keep everybody healthy, and how it will look if they do something one way and another conference or another group of teams approaches things completely differently. So there's that element to things as well.
The spirit of the decision to suspend the season, I think, was noble. The way that they framed it, it was in the interest of player health and safety. It's the way that the decision was made, and in particular, the way it was communicated, that led to a ton of infighting. David, in particular, referenced a particular episode with Jim Delaney, Kevin Warren's predecessor, who back in the early 90s tried to slip Penn State into the Big Ten Conference. Penn State eventually ended up getting into the conference, but David pointed to that and said this was a situation that Jim Delaney had learned from and had used effectively to manage the conference moving forward.
And what Delaney learned about that and what he used beyond in his 30 years as commissioner was a sense for when there's dissent. When there's palpable dissent, you get everyone together, you don't air your dirty laundry, you get everyone together, you see whether you can do it or not. And then if you decided you're going to do it, Then you tell everyone, look, we're not going to have dissent openly on the outside. If we don't want to do this, let's say so now. But we need uniformity when we go out there in the world. So clearly, none of that happened, and it was a mess because of it.
It was a mess because of it. And ironically, when you asked Nicole about this,
mm-hmm.
The Big Ten was the model for that. Under yeah. Jim Delaney. Like, when people disagreed, they fell in line. They said all the right things. Yep.
The Big Ten used to be the model for how to communicate effectively, how to circle the wagons, how to close ranks. In this case, that did not happen with the new commissioner, Dan.
No, it didn't. And it showed, obviously, because you have, you know, Scott Frost in Nebraska and Ryan Day in Ohio State and Jim Harbaugh in Michigan all saying they want to play and how upset they are and how there's no communication. And you have very public infighting among huge member programs.
I remember at the time we did a show. And of course, at this point, we were continuing to do live streams every day, trying to figure right. out what's happening here. And what was really unclear at the time was which direction it was going to go from there. Of course, the Big Ten and Pac-12 were on record saying that they were going to do away with their season. They were going to aim to play in the spring. It was unclear how serious a suggestion that was. I was fascinated by it. I always wanted there to be a possibility of a spring season, if only because it was something new. It was a quirk. We had never seen it before. And at the time, it kind of felt like the best idea on the table, at least to me. Meanwhile, we had the ACC, we had the SEC, and we had the Big 12, all of whom were standing pat. And this turned into a storyline. We'll unpack this a little bit more later. But they were not ready to commit to extreme measures at this juncture. They were standing pat. I think at this point, as we got a little bit past this decision from the Big Ten and Pac-12, we eventually came around to the idea that, like, no, they're actually just not going to change their mind here. They're going to find a way to play through it, come hell or high water.
Yeah, and the backdrop, by the way, is the NBA announced that they were going to move the rest of the balance of the season schedule and the playoffs all to Florida, all to Disney World. And so you have this backdrop of a major sport postponing and taking extreme precaution by putting all of its players and coaches and staff members into a bubble in Florida, which I believe that began in July, right?
Yeah.
That began in July. So that has to be weighing heavily on decision makers within the sport about postponing until possibly spring and saying, well, look, the calendar is already sort of screwy in the sports world. What can we do? And I remember Urban Meyer was one of the big opponents of moving to spring, saying it'll never happen. It'll never work. It'll be bad for the sport. I remember that there were big opinions, big capital O opinions about the potential of moving the sport down a few months.
I was fascinated by the spring thing.
Yeah,
I was fascinated from the moment I heard about it. And I didn't hear about it from the Big Ten. I heard about it from Chris Fowler. Chris Fowler was doing regular Instagram TV things with all of this going down. And I remember he was the one who first pointed out that he had talked to some decision makers, coaches, administrators, what have you, and that this was an outside possibility. I asked David, just from his standpoint, how realistic of a possibility was this? Is it something that he thought could have actually happened?
It could have worked, and it would have gotten under the wire before the fiscal year ends, which is June 30th for all these major universities. So I was saying, you know, Jeff Brom came up with a really good plan. You remember that? Everyone forgets that now, but he thought it all out and it made sense. We could have had a lot more satisfying season, I think, if we'd had it in the spring. Everyone in the SEC is glad they had it when they did, and they just kind of forged ahead, and thank God nothing really bad happened. But they didn't know that. They didn't know that then. They just went ahead and did it.
So I get the sense from him that there was at least some discussion around the spring season being a little bit of a possibility. Nicole brings up a really valid point, though, that David didn't.
I think if everybody had done it, it would have been different. But if you only had two leagues and three were going to play in the fall, like the split part, that was always going to be uncomfortable if it happened. And especially as we now see what it's actually like. I mean, we saw guys programs opt out of bowl games. Like, it's not hard to imagine that would have happened at the Power Five level as well. Again, but then you have, okay, what are the TV deals? Like, what are all those other pieces around it look like? Who knows? But I do think that it sounded like a better idea at the time, at least something to play towards and not say like, we're just totally wiping out this year. Whereas ultimately, like, wiping out the whole year is probably the easier situation for all of these teams. And I'm sure some of these FCS programs would tell you that too, even though they're trying to do the spring season.
I remember in the heat of the moment, Dan, arguing vociferously with you that the spring season was a good idea.
Right.
And you throwing cold water on that idea, being like, why are we doing this at all?
Yeah, it just seemed kicking the can is never really a solution. I understand certain conferences and perhaps at lower levels, FCS, Division II, whatever, that they'll say, well, we don't have the funds to test people with the rigor and the consistency that major conferences do, because it's expensive. You remember, this is all, you know, testing is in its infancy, rapid tests. We don't know how accurate or inaccurate everything is. And so there's that cloud of uncertainty that did push certain conferences and levels to the spring. But ultimately, I think Nicole is absolutely right, where even though the sport is inherently splintered, the fact that you could have two or three conferences playing in the fall, then another couple in the spring, it really deflates the sport and interest in the sport to I think everybody paying attention.
Yeah, and as we record, again, there is a bit of a spring season going on. We've got FCS playoffs that have been underway for a few weeks now. And I guess the obvious question is, if we had more FBS action going on, would there be more attention on it? Yeah, there would be. It definitely would not feel like a normal season. What we got in 2020 wasn't a normal season either. We did get through it.
Right. Though I wonder, Ty, and to you, I think everything you're saying is correct, but I wonder, you know, NBA ratings cratered because sports fans are used to a certain TV calendar, to watching the sports that they love. And so when the NBA Finals is in, what, October instead of June, what does it mean when you are deciding between the Kentucky Derby and Auburn, Kentucky? What does it mean when you're deciding between the Masters and Cal Stanford? What does it mean when you're deciding between Yankees, Orioles and Texas, Oklahoma? That kind of thing. What does that do in terms of the revenue for the sport and the sport's popularities and the ability to maintain fan interest? I mean, there's no way of knowing, but I think the move of the NBA makes that at least an interesting question.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, so here we are. It's at this point, the later part of August, and we've got a decision that the Big Ten made. The other three Power Five conferences are standing pat. And what we see happen is this outcry, both from within the Big Ten conference, as we alluded to earlier, as well as from the general public and politicians. There was a lot going on out in the public sphere around college football. To some extent, the Big Ten had been politicized, for better or worse, and the speculation started to mount that the ground was shifting and that maybe, there would be some sort of fall season after all.
Everyone we talked to all summer, like, they kept moving the goalposts. So at one point they were saying, we'll never bring the athletes back if campuses aren't open, right? That went out the window when they were like, oh no, it's actually safer to bring just the athletes back and have no one else there. And we're like, well, but they're supposed to be like regular students. Like, isn't this the whole thing that, like, there's a Supreme Court case about and all these lawsuits. Mm-hmm. So some of those things, just the goalposts kept getting moved. And another one of them was this idea of, you know, what happens if there's an outbreak in the student population? Like, I think that, to me, one of the big turning points was when Notre Dame decided not to shut down and just to quarantine all of its students for 2 weeks, because at that point, and they were like, essentially, like, we're going to play through this. That's when other places were like, okay, well, we'll just let the case numbers go up, survive it for a couple of weeks, and move on. And I don't think that if you had said to any athletic directors or commissioners in the previous months, oh, you're going to like have 300 cases,
right?
Or 1,000 cases, and there's still going to be a season. Like, they would have said no, that would have shut it down.
Yeah, I mean, she's absolutely right. And at this point, we are also talking about which schools want to play and which schools don't want to play, rumoredly, and that there may be votes and that there are anonymous Twitter accounts saying the season's coming back on this date, but maybe this date, and here's where everything lies right now. It was all over the place, and especially with the Big Ten, but within a number of different conferences, and that, you know, the Big 12 is looking at the SEC and like they're going to fall in line. So there was so much swirling that it became sort of impossible to separate the real from the hopeful.
And I think the one thing that I remember looking back is how much at the time we talked about the money aspect of it. This was sort of the elephant in the room. It will forever remain unclear how much the public outcry actually shifted the opinions of decision makers. But we knew that the revenue thing was out there. And the challenge, I have to believe, from the standpoint of the power brokers, was how do we balance the loss of revenue with a potential moral and, frankly, legal firestorm if the virus leads to dire circumstances on campus? Nicole mentioned this. David mentioned it as well.
The main thing they were afraid of is some sort of class action suit from a bunch of players who got really sick. That didn't happen. But everyone's going to forget that because they were really worried about it at the time. And that was their motivation for all this. And I don't blame them. But the whole thing is so screwy because this is treated as an amateur endeavor.
Yeah. The amateurism thing we could come back to at another point in time. But what was going on is there were medical advisors to the NCAA saying that if numbers continued on their trajectory, there was no way anyone should be playing. And obviously, if health and well-being were the primary concerns here, this would have gone in a different direction. The question is, fair or not, did this revenue angle to some degree win out over what you could argue were common sense arguments to not play because of health and well-being, Dan?
Yeah, and it's also important to remember, doctors aren't lockstep with each other. Right? Everybody's looking and considering different facts, right? There's the myocarditis thing. There is the, you know, how could it spread from this person to this person? And is it outside? Is it in the locker room? Or should we be cleaning equipment in this way? Like, what are the potential long term? Like, there are so many different things that different doctors consider in making their recommendations that it's impossible to even say, This group of doctors is a monolithic opinion group. So, you know, you had what, parents of players that are doctors saying this and the commissioner turning to this doctor who's saying that. Like, it all became very confusing, understandably.
One of the points that Nicole brought up in our conversations with her was the lack of oversight from the NCAA, or I should say the lack of true leadership from the NCAA to help drive this process. We'll cover that in part two when we talk about what we learned. In the meantime, though, the Big Ten, 5 weeks later, decides it's going to plug the season back in. It's going to do this thing again. They move forward with a modified 8-game schedule. You may recall Ohio State only played 5 games because of COVID reasons. Eventually, they do end up making it through to the college football playoff and the national championship before losing to Alabama. For all intents and purposes, I guess a successful COVID season for the Big Ten, despite the fact that it started out on very, very rocky footing. Of course, we'd be putting our head in the sand if we didn't acknowledge the TV partners and the role that they had in turning the season back on.
I think it's definitely a safe guess to say that this was driven by the money and the finances. And I think it's also fair for those people who made those decisions to say, well, it's not just greed. It's not just the money we bring in, because it's that props up everything else. You had certain conferences kind of select exactly how many conference games they were going to play or try to reschedule things, like up until, you know, that very last weekend when there were conference tournament games being played, like in the SEC and ACC, some of these makeup games. And that is solely about the inventory that you promised your TV partners. Like, those teams don't need to play. They don't want to play. But you want to say, we got X amount of games out of Y.
And so it happened, Dan. We had a season. After all that, did you like the product in 2020?
No, not especially. I didn't like the product for a number of reasons. I mean, not having a fall camp and, you know, having new coaches and, you know, freshmen or transfers and not having live tackling with a regular fall camp and not having an environment within a stadium that we're used to across the sport by, you know, for large part, it was a college football devoid of the culture that makes the sport incredible. I am glad they played. I'm glad it went relatively well in terms of player health and safety, but I don't look back on the 2020 season with any degree of fondness with all the starting and stopping and arguments about, you know, people having conspiracy theories about, oh, Michigan just wanted to duck Ohio State or Florida State just wanted to duck Clemson. Like, it was just, there was so much nonsense just thrown into the crockpot of 2020 that I'm so ready for a season not involving any of that silliness.
I had a sense of guilt doing our show.
Sure. Certainly.
I really did. And I know we heard from fans out there who were also ambivalent. There was a lot going on in the world. And to some extent, it felt very awkward to be cheering on college football in the way that we would typically do as a national college football podcast with so much bad news going on around us. I didn't know where to place that. And I know you struggled with that as well. Ultimately, as you said, I think we were glad that we had a season that we made it through relatively unscathed. But for a good chunk of it, I just didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to feel, especially because of many of the things we just discussed. All of this turmoil going on around the sport, trying to figure out, okay, what is happening here? There are conferences that are ripping themselves apart at the seams. I hope that on the backside of this, we'll be better for it. We'll discuss that in part two. I think what we know definitively after going through the genesis of this decision, decision making, and the season at large, first and foremost, the Big Ten and Kevin Warren found itself in a near impossible situation. And frankly, they botched the way that it was communicated. They screwed up the packaging of that very important decision. Nicole's point was that they made the call based on pure intentions to try and keep people safe. I don't think anybody can fault them for that. But they did so, I guess, without the support of many within their own conference, certainly before they had everyone on board to echo out the right talking points. And really, in lieu of that decision, they could have just kicked the can down the road. They could have decided that instead of pulling the plug and creating a circus, they would wait a few weeks, much the way the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12 decided to do, because by that point, all these schools had adequate protocols in place. They had more access to testing. They knew a little bit more about the virus and what exactly they were looking for. If they had decided to postpone this decision instead of being the first to make it, perhaps they would have put themselves in a better situation and not have this firestorm circulating around them.
By the way, it should be noted when you and I say things like it went relatively well, we say that hoping it went relatively well. We are not in locker rooms. We are not on campus. We are not in dorm rooms. We are not in college town apartments. We have no idea what players went through. And by the looks of how a number of schools or players at a number of schools and coaches at a number of schools decided not to play in bowl games and to just stop the season as soon as possible, it doesn't seem like the player experience with what? No in-person classes and no social life and parties and Friday night dinners with teammates, that they were ready to be absolutely done with the 2020 season, much more so than any group of people. So we hope if things went relatively well, but we don't know. We have no idea what it was like on a day-to-day basis. If you're a player, if you're a coach, if you're a family member, there are coaches who lived apart from family members that were especially immunocompromised. We have no concept. So when we say we hope, or it appears that it went pretty well, that's just because we don't know about outward personal disasters. So our fingers are crossed that things were at least okay in the fall of 2020 for those involved.
The second takeaway, Dan, despite all of the bad stuff in the world and our ambivalence towards watching and rooting for college football, I thought our friend David Jones hit it best.
It was a real release to finally have the games again. And it was good. It was a good thing because we got to be with our tribes, you know? Even reporters, they have their own tribes. When we go to a press box, the other reporters are our tribe. You get to socialize, you get to see each other. It was all gone. This was so much different to me because no one got to really get together. No one got to socialize. That tribe you've got, man, you wear your colors like no other sport.
We couldn't get together like we could in the past.
Correct.
But the games were out there. As David said, they were still pretty good. And it still gave us a way to be part of the tribe, even if we couldn't be there physically.
Yeah, we got the calories we needed. We absolutely got the calories we needed, but the meal was not anywhere near the same.
Thanks for listening to part one. Don't forget, you can listen to full interviews with Nicole and David on our Patreon at verballers.com. Join us on Thursday for part two, when we wonder, where does it all go from here?